Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin, to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales. Let's check out Corinda.
The small town of Corinda is 70 kilometres southwest of Walgett in northwestern New South Wales, 8 hours' drive northwest of Sydney. It's at the north end of the Macquarie Marshes. It has a population of around 160. The ancient lake Cuddy Springs is located near Corinda. Here, archaeologists have recorded fossils of some now extinct animals like the giant kangaroos and goannas, as well as stone tools, bones, and grinding stones from thousands of years of Aboriginal occupation. Some items that Aboriginal people used have been dated to 30,000 years ago. In the book, The History of Corinda as it was and is now, the authors tell us that the region around Corinda is Wilwun people's country. White settlers came into the Corinda district in the mid-1800s, taking up land along the rivers and creeks to graze cattle and sheep. From 1869, Thomas McNamara had an inn where a travelling stock route crossed the Marthaguy Creek. The village of Corinda developed here and was proclaimed in 1890. In 1908, the Corinda bore for the town was sunk, enabling people to move away from the creek, and a second town settlement, known as the Top End, grew up to become present-day Corinda.
My name's Wayne William Lund.
And what do people call you?
Bronco. I stopped being a shearing contractor in September last year. I did it for, I don't know, 40 years. Before that, I was a shearer for 20-odd years. Maybe longer, maybe 30 years, I'm not sure. But my best shearers, there was a couple of handy shearers here, but my best shearers come from Crookwell. There was a shearer from Crookwell called Mark Dawson. It was just like getting an egg and putting it in boiling water and taking the shell off it and just come out picture perfect every time he shore a sheep. Yeah, he was a good shearer, real good clean shearer. But that's why I give it away in September this year, or the last year's just gone. Couldn't get shearers, you know. It was too hard to get shearers to come out here. You know, when I first started shearing, it was worth $20 a hundred. Now they're getting $500 a hundred. Some blokes shear a lot of sheep, some blokes, you know. Most blokes average 100, 100 and odd. Well, I'm sure, you know, 200 and odd. Once you get used to it, you know, it was pretty easy. Once you got fit, the first job I ever had was a station hand. I was getting $18 a week working for a company, Womboyne. And then Dad used to be a shearer, and he said, why don't you come work in the shed? It was worth, I don't know, shearing was worth $20 a hundred then. And I went and worked as a shed hand, I don't know, I can't remember how much, wasn't worth a great lot of money. He used to just help, they'd shear to start the sheep. When they put it on the long blow, you'd just go and finish it off. And then I just learnt that way. And the first shed they sent me to was, I went to Porter's. And the first shed I saw 100. Yeah. But I'd been shearing a few sheep on and off for a while. Oh, well, I shore the Narracombe for a long time. And then they had a strike on, and I was a shearer too, and they rang up and wanted me to go out to Woodside and protest. I said, mate, I'm not, why would I go and protest? I said, I'm not going, you know. And there was a big commotion when they out there because of Kiwis and everything, all arguing and fighting. And but after a while, they had the next minute the white comb come in. Normal comb was only, you know, probably maybe 40, and the wide comb's 92. And it was a lot easier, you know, take a lot more off, quicker. I think they didn't want to use it, and then a heap of the farmers got the Kiwis in, came in, and they were shearing here with the wide comb while the strike was on. They were just out of Canamble there, and then they started shooting. Blokes got up on the roof, and there's all bullet holes in, you can see bullet holes in the roof. It's like everything you argue over, and next minute down the track it's in. I think I stopped when I was 41, I think. But then I did a bit when I couldn't get anyone. All the shearers come from away, and most of the contractors come from away too. One comes from Albert, and the other blokes from down the line come and do it. And it's real good money, $500 a hundred, but some blokes will shear 200, that's $1,000. That's good money. I made a lot of money when I was shearing. And then I become a contractor. I used to have, you know, sometimes I might have two sides going back then. You know, look, I've paid a lot of blokes money on Friday, and Monday morning they're broke. They'll come and want, you know, Monday, come and bite you again, you know, when you give it to them, because they'd work it off and work it anyway. But if they went to the pub and cashed a cheque, sometimes you mightn't be able to give it all to them, but they'd probably drink it there, you know, you probably wouldn't have to give it to them, they'd drink it there. Yeah, well, that was the best place you could get a cheque cashed. So sometimes you've got a cheque, you couldn't get it cashed. But you'd go down there when Ernie Robertson or somebody had the pub and just say, come in and say, Robbo, we're going to cut out tomorrow. Can you get, you know, there'll probably be $30,000 worth of wages. And he'd get the money. The pub, that's the best shearing shed in town. You know, you spend a lot of blokes spend a lot of money there. Or I used to just go, come home. I didn't drink, so I'd probably just come home, stay home. Next day I'd get up and go to the races on a Saturday. You have 15 or 16 people, you know, working for you in one shed. One year I had 70 odd workers work for me. But if you got good men, I used to have two sides, no real, we never had any trouble at all. So, like, we had a bit of a tough time here when the flood was on, 2 or 3 years ago. We had to drive all the way to the cattle yard, pull up, then we'd get in my vehicle and their vehicle, take the buggy through the water, get on the other side, and then go drive about another 10 miles to the shed. You know, you could cheer them a little bit damp, but because in the wool dust, they don't like the wool being wet either if it goes down. You know, like you're pressing a bale 200 kilos or 180, 90 kilos. Once you put it down, then you open it up, you can imagine what it's going to be like. The smell just comes out of it. And then it costs you money if they've got to take it all out of that bale and dry it out, especially if you've got 100 bales or something.
In 1983, David Bowie landed in a helicopter to film his music video, Let's Dance, at the Corinda Hotel.
There's some of them in the old David Bowie film clip, which most people know now, Let's Dance. It's old Billy Schooler, he was quite a character. He's one of the main ones dancing around the clip. Old Ross Williams, he was in it, he used to be the postmaster. Big tall bloke in the clip at the door, Peter Griffin, he was an overseer in a property out here. Old Robbo was a publican then, and he came in with a wad of cash and he said, I'll keep everybody here, just want to keep drinking, have a good time. He didn't know who he was. Yeah, you go for your life, mate, because he started. David Bowie was.
Just David Bowie, yeah. I know exactly how it goes. He went to Coonabarabran because his mate ran the pub there. He got the Coonabarabran and it wasn't what he was quite looking for, too hilly and tar roads and that. He wanted dirt roads. So his mate that was a publican at Coonabarabran did 12 months behind the bar here the year before. Told him to come over here and have a look. And they jumped in the helicopters, flew here, and it was just perfect. So they walked in and gave him a lot of cash and said, keep everyone here for the day. And
they got a semi-trailer to drive around the block to kick up a bit of dust, like, for the film clip.
I tell everyone I'm David Bowie's love child.
Here's Jan Curry and Joy Dare, catching up about growing up in Corinda and the old telephone party lines.
Parents had fair, had property and I worked there. And then I married the boy next door and I moved there. And I'm still here.
I think, Jan, you were born in Sydney, but your parents lived out here.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. So you went to correspondence.
Yes, I did correspond to school. Mm. 6 years, and then I went to school in Sydney. Mm.
Basically, I'm the same.
Does it sound like your life too?
I was born in Walgett. And the floods were on when I was born, so my parents had to bring me home through Canamble, Warren, down the Warren Road to where they lived, where we lived. Had to cross over swamps and goodness knows what. Wasn't cart in those days.
Oh, well, it was two shops, pub, like a grocery shop, even a butcher's for a little while.
And a baker.
Mm, you remember the butcher's?
No, I remember the baker.
You remember the baker? Mm. In those days, you only went to town not very often. We went to the dentist, the doctor, occasionally the groceries. Otherwise, you got what you wanted on the mail, the service. And you probably stayed at home a lot more, really.
We're used to having our own company, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah, we're not mm. used to living in Tettenham with company.
Mm. We had party lines, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah, we had telephones.
Had telephones. Well, I did when I was young, and I'm sure you would have.
We didn't have mobile phones. We just had a, just ran a piece of wire from property to property. Mm. And on the party line, you everybody had a different ring.
Mm.
Two shorts and long, or Morse code.
Mm.
And if you were having tenants or whatever, you contacted them. And,
You let everyone know by that way, and there was an exchange here in Corinda. You'd do a long wing to get to Corinda.
Sometimes it took a very long wing to get to
Very Corinda. Long, depending on what they were doing. And then if you wanted to connect to another party line, that party line might have been on with another party line or between themselves, so you couldn't get on. But and then if you wanted to ring someone who was on your party line, you'd just ring, like, for instance, my home number was 26S, but if you wanted to talk to someone, 26D for instance, it was the long and two shorts, I think, too. But, yeah, and there were different party lines. Like, I don't know, I think there was 12 or 13 on the 26 line, and some of them only had three or four, so that was a lot better for those people, but it was a bit hard at home when, you know,
trying to get one was a lot. It was pretty hard to get on to something.
What was your number, Jan? Do you remember?
3D.
3D. Mm. And how many on that 3 line were there?
That's 6, I think.
Yeah, well, I think the 26 line had 12 or 13.
Oh, yeah. You had to be a bit lucky to
get on. Especially if there was a couple on that line, like my mum and the next door neighbour used to get on and have a good old chat.
Yeah.
And it didn't cost anything. Because they could just ring each other like that. I think it must have cost if you wanted to ring another party. And if you heard the phone ringing and it went, that was our number. I remember being a kid and my brother and I used to charge to the phone to answer it, you know, like through the front gate, up through the house. And we had an old, I think they're called Dickersons. You lift the handle and talk into this mouthpiece.
When you wanted a quick call to somebody or order something and groceries or something on the mail and somebody's on the line chatting and you can't get the line. I'm thinking in real hard cases they'd say, could you get off for a minute and let me use the line?
The Corinda area has many types of river eucalypts, including ancient river gums, box trees and coolabars. The black soil plains were once covered in smaller trees like supplejack, wilga and rosewood before they were cleared for grazing or agriculture. Part of the Corinda area is known as the dryland region, while on the other areas near the marshes the cattle graze wet ground and the area turns to lakes with swans and pelicans. Mustering this country is a special skill, where horses continue to be used to manage the boggy ground and high reedy undergrowth.
I'm Donna Veach and I've lived in Corinda all my life, in marsh country, in the marsh country. A beautiful
natural wetland.
Natural wetland, yeah. Yeah, you ride horses and to muster, and in the dry seasons you can get the motorbikes in, but the last couple of times we've had a chopper in there, mustering the cattle. Went to boarding school, for 4 years and, yeah, come back to the country. And then I married a bloke literally over the river, so I didn't go far. I suppose you could say it's lonely life, but I don't find it lonely. Yeah. Yeah.
It's roughly about 70,000 acres. 40 k's out of Corinda on Macquarie Marshes. We've got cattle that go into the marshes and they'll make a little track through the reed beds. So the reed beds usually form on like a channel. And once you enter the reed bed and these tracks that the cattle have made, the reeds could be like, you know, 15 foot above you. They just close over the top and it can black out the sun. Like cloudy days is the big thing. Like, you know, you usually look at the sun, which way you're sort of heading. Sometimes you can get lost with the cloudy days, but you can see which way the water's flowing, so you know which way's north, which way's south. I grew up on them, so it's sort of like, it wasn't scary at all. Like, you know what I mean? It might be different for other people, but I always did it, so, yeah. Water flow hasn't been as good as it used to be. A lot of irrigation, that takes a lot of water out of the system. The lack of water sort of changed the marsh a fair bit.
Let's take a listen to local poet Julianne Lampf with her poem, Boo.
Boo. I have this wretched Kelpie pup. For looks he'd win no prize. He's black and lean and lanky and certainly not wise. Obedient he's learning, has a long way yet to go. And when I take him out to work, I know that this is so. We set off on the motorbike at a cracking pace, an exhilarating feeling, the wind blowing in my face. Standing up behind me, a head pokes under my arm. I'm concentrating on the job, he's using canine charm. Excited anticipation, he weaves from side to side, occasionally a paw on my arm, with some force applied. Seems to ask the question, are we going the right way? The two-way squawk something, I know it wasn't stay. Out of the blue, he'll nuzzle me, a wet nose behind my ear. I grin and think how wonderful to know man's friend is near. We stop and have a cooling drink at the water trough. At the side of the stock, we are away, bouncing through the rough. Off he flies at my command. He's keen to have a go, then steadies to a statue. 'Tis work I want, not show. With a bit of encouragement, the job is finally done. Happily we return home to know this time we've won. However, alone with no distractions, we tackle every job, unless the boss drives up to help and others join the mob. Immediately he changes. 'Tis Satan on the loose, ignorant, disobedient, oblivious to abuse. After all my pleading, when he's ready, he'll respond. Finally jump back on the bike. No show that I am fond, no encouragement or word of praise. A reprimand is due. Repentant, tail stops wagging as sad eyes gaze at you. Minutes later, he's forgotten you're the boss and all is well. He'll do anything to make amends, not on mistakes to dwell. I'm sure it's true the saying, dog is man's best friend. Their faithfulness unquestionable, partners until the end.
After his death in 2016, members of the Corinda community started the Let's Dance Corinda Festival to honour his music and remember the time he came to Corinda. The festival brings hundreds of people, bands and entertainment to town each year. Visitors flock to the hotel to have their picture taken against the same wall where David Bowie sang.
When David Bowie died, my sister was living up here, Mo, and she's right into music and all that sort of stuff, and she said, oh, let's have a David Bowie festival. I'm like, what? Anyway, we did it, but we had the actual thing here at the hall, but we realised the sound wasn't real great. So the next year we had it at the Oval, and it's been there ever since, which is an outside one, but it's more mucking around, you got to get a stage. And like, we were happy just having something in town, really, and doing something for David Bowie. Like, we had Lady Stardust, she was our first one, and then Jeff Duff for a fair few years, and he was bloody good. the sound of his voice was pretty good, like, yeah. You know, he wanted a dressing shed and we're out in the middle of nowhere. So we set up a tent and put some carpet there, and I'm sure it's the only bloody dressing shed he's ever had like that, you know. It means that we're telling people David Bowie was here, which is really unusual anyway, like to be out here in Corinda in a small town.
Yeah, they wanted to create a music festival that paid tribute to David Bowie's visit to the town in 1983. We have music, food, family events. There's a dog jumping event. We do a shearing demonstration. Yeah, just to give people a bit of the taste of the outback when they're here. It's a fun weekend. I mean, we're not all David Bowie fans, but he did come to Corinda, so that's the reason why the event was created. We do, we get some really strange people to the town, which is, it's an eye-opener for the locals. The Corinda people out here, they don't see much, go anywhere. So they're die-hard Bowie fans. They come in their weird outfits, very eccentric, dancing and singing. And yeah, it's fun. It's a good weekend. But for me, I do it because, you know, you want to create a special event for the community. And it is rewarding because when you can sit back and see the day unfold and the night, it's sort of, it is really rewarding seeing all the locals have fun. And yeah, when it's a really successful event, it sort of makes it all worthwhile.
One thing that I love about the Bowie Festival is the Sunday at the pub, because they just jam everybody, everyone just squishes in like sardines into the pub, and whoever does the reenactment, just the electricity that's in there from everybody, the vibe is amazing. So bare minimum, I'll definitely be out here on Sunday. It's sort of the wrap up of everything that's happened. So when David Bowie come back, like was out here doing the film clip to Let's Dance many, many years ago, he went up against the tiled wall at the pub just when you walk in. So what we do every year is there's like a reenactment. So whoever is performing it at that time, we've had various artists over the last few years do it, but they'll come in and they're set up along the wall. So it's just like, you know, it's their little brush of fame, and you know, so it's like a reenactment done up against, and they play many of the Bowie songs, but it really goes off when they play the Let's Dance, which was played in the pub. We have to block off the front door because there's so many people trying to go in there, and it's just people are on the bar, people are on people's shoulders. We've got to take out the fireplace so there's more room in there. They're shoving their heads through the doors. It's crazy. That's really special to me. Like, you know, all year organising and swapping and all the things that happens, and when you're there Friday and Saturday, you know, just trying to arrange things, and then things go wrong and you patch it back up and no one knows that anything's happened or hasn't worked out, and then all of a sudden you you're at the pub and you're like, oh god, we made it, it was amazing, no one has any idea of what we've been pulling our hair out about, and everyone just has a great time there. And as I said, the vibe and stuff is just electric.
During 1983 to the hotel to record Let's Dance. So, of course, we call ourselves Let's Dance Corinda. Everyone gets in and helps. Like yesterday, we had a working bee down there for the Bowie weekend, and, you know, lots of people came and we got lots done. I enjoy being just helping out, putting it on. And not only, yeah, colourful as in dressing up as well, they go with a full David Bowie dress up. Some of them are diehard fans.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.